Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And good afternoon, everybody. It's great to have you with us on the Steve Jones Show with Kevin Herr alongside as we roll through a Wednesday together. Have a lot of fun on today's show. Scott Radisic is coming up tomorrow from Populous. We're going to talk about Beaver Stadium and also other Penn State facilities and get a read from him as to how they're going about this. Today, Ben Jones, StateCollege.com on the show. And we're also going to discuss in the second hour of the show stories that you should be looking for that are actually of great interest that you may not realize are of great interest to you. We're going to start out with something fun. Don't fall down, Kev.
I'm waiting. Because if it's...
No.
I'm waiting.
No. This. I spoke today at the State College Tailback Club this morning. And I, to be honest with you, I had an absolute blast. Just a lot of fun just talking.
Tailback Club?
Good time. It's called the Tailback Club. They meet every Wednesday. I think they meet every Wednesday from the end of the quarterback club. So that would be in early December. And actually end their meetings in early August. So I've spoken to them, I think this is the fourth time I've spoke there in recent years. It's a breakfast club, and really, I just had a lot of fun. Told them how fortunate I felt to have the job that I have, that I probably enjoyed even more now than even when I started. And I thought when I started I was having a blast, but I enjoy it even more now. We talked about, you know, what technology means to the job. We talked about, you know, obviously they wanted to know about football and basketball and things. But we just had a good time. Now, when I was done, guy came up to me and he handed me a section from today's Daily Collegian. And he said, "Have you seen this?" And I said, "No, because I really don't read the Daily Collegian that often." I mean, let's be honest about it. We all know, you know, with all due respect to the Daily Item, newspapers are dying across the country. I don't want them to die, but it's a fact of life. More people are using devices and less hard copy, but he handed this to me. And what it was is that it is the Daily Collegian and people voting at collegian.psu.edu for Penn State's greatest athlete. So they selected 32 of them, and they're now down to 8. So this is the Beaver Stadium region. The number one seed was LeVar Arrington. And he faced off against Candy Finn, the number 8 seed. Candy Finn was an unbelievable lacrosse and field hockey player here at Penn State. She was an All-American in both. And LeVar got 87% of the vote in advance. The number 4 seed was Mike Reed. And he went against the bronze medalist diver, Mary Ellen Clark. I think she got the bronze medal in, I want to say, Barcelona in 92. And Mike Reed won. He got 65% of the vote. The third seed was Rocky Rodriguez. She just won the Herman Trophy in women's soccer as the top women's soccer player in the country. She just won it. They, you know, right after they won the national championship. And she squared off against the number 6 seed, Char Moret. Char is the current field hockey coach here. She was on the bronze medal LA Olympics field hockey team. And Rocky was able to get 78% of the vote. She advanced. Then it was the number two seed, Micah Hancock, the great national championship volleyball setter, against Larry Johnson, the number seven seed. With 60% of the vote, Micah Hancock advanced. So now you had LeVar Arrington against Mike Reed. And Arrington, with 75% of the vote, advanced. And you had...
But he doesn't have a Grammy. Right.
No, he does not have a Grammy. Mike has a Grammy and an Outland. And Rocky Rodriguez then faced Micah Hancock. And Micah Hancock, the number two seed, advanced. She got 81% of the vote to advance. Which then took us to the Rec Hall region. The number one seed in the Rec Hall region, David Taylor. He was up against the number eight seed, the outstanding men's soccer goalie, Andrew Wolverton, who's now with the LA Galaxy in the MLS. Taylor got 92% of the vote and advanced. The number four seed, Taylor Battle, against the number five seed, Paul Posluszny.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Well, that's why it's a 4-5, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, those 4-5s are tough to pick.
Yet, by a decent margin, Paul Posluszny, 77% advanced. Then the number three seed, I mean, I think people are getting a kick out of this. I could see Dick and Milton right now. They're going, oh, come on, the wrestler's got to win. The number three seed, Maggie Lucas, against the number six seed, Ty Blackledge. So Maggie, of course, outstanding Lady Lion basketball player, and of course, Blackledge. Blackledge won it, but got 51% to advance. And then the number two seed was Kajana Carter against the three-time All-American national champion on the U.S. team, Megan Hodge, in women's volleyball. And Kajana won it with 62%. So then you had David Taylor against Paul Posluszny. And Taylor got 56% of the vote, and he advanced to what they would call the Elite Eight. And you had Kajana Carter against Ty Blackledge. And Kajana got 59%, and he advanced to the Elite Eight. Which now takes us to the Pagula Ice Arena region. The number one seed, John Cappelletti, up against Patrick Shirk. Cappelletti got 71% of the vote, advanced. The number four seed, Penn State's second all-time leading scorer behind Taylor Battle, Jesse Arnell, all-time leading rebounder, against Shane Conlon. And by the way, Arnell also played football here at Penn State. In fact, Arnell was actually here on a football scholarship and then played basketball on the side. So it was Jesse Arnell against Shane Conlon. Conlon got 66% and advanced. Then you had the number three seed, Michael Robinson, against the number six seed, the Lady Lion all-time leading scorer, Kelly Mazzani.
Another tough one.
70%. Michael Robinson.
Really? That surprises me a little. I thought that would be a lot closer.
It's a Daily Collegian. I don't know.
No, I agree. I'm just saying. I thought it would be closer. That's all.
Kelly had a great career here. The one thing that the one area, though, where you could look at Kelly and say, okay, great career, but done on huge volume. She only averaged about 1 point per shot. She had like 2,600 points and had like almost 2,500 shots, which is second only to Shamika Holzclaw in the history of women's basketball. Kurt Warner, the number two overall seed, went up against the outstanding volleyball player Blair Brown, the number seven seed. Warner got 77%, advanced. So then it was John Cappelletti against Shane Conlon. Penn State's lone Heisman Trophy winner picked up 80% of the vote and advanced. Michael Robinson was against Kurt Warner. With 51% of the vote, Michael Robinson advanced. So now you got Arrington and Micah Hancock, David Taylor, Kajana Carter, John Cappelletti, and Michael Robinson, which now brings us to the Bryce Jordan Center region. The number 2 seed, Ed Ruth, against the number 7 seed, Tim Frazier of the Portland Trailblazers. Ed Ruth with 77% advanced. The other side of the bracket is the number 3 seed, Terry Collins, against the World Cup soccer champion, Ali Krieger. And Kerry Collins advanced with 55% of the vote. Then you have the number 4 seed, the hockey player, Casey Bailey, who just was traded yesterday by Toronto to Ottawa, against Christian Hackenberg. And Casey Bailey got 53% of the vote and advanced.
That was a tight one.
Which brings us... Right, it was. Which then brings us to the last pairing. The number 8 seed, Susie McConnell. The great Lady Lion basketball player and gold medalist. Against the number 1 seed, Jack Ham. Jack advanced 81%.
Well, he's the number 1 seed. You would expect that from the number 1 seed.
Ed Ruth then went against Kerry Collins. Ruth got 57% and he advanced.
What was Ed Ruth's seed again?
2.
All right. That's going to be an interesting one, too.
And then Jack Ham advanced at 79%. So in the final 8, which then they'll reveal a final 4 next week, it's LeVar Arrington versus Micah Hancock, David Taylor versus Kajana Carter, John Cappelletti versus Michael Robinson, and Jack Ham versus Ed Ruth. Wow. There you go. That's just a little slice of nonsensical fun.
Yeah, I was just going to say, now, isn't that fun?
Yes, it's fun. It's nonsensical fun.
It serves no purpose, no bearing in life, but it's fun.
Zero.
See, I thought you were going to come out with the ESPN predicting the next 25 Super Bowl winners.
No.
I'm like, really? The next 25 Super Bowl winners? How in the world can you even think of going past 2?
Oh, cool. Franco Harris wants to be a Facebook friend. Yeah, that's cool. Okay.
I met him once.
Hold on. He speaks highly of that moment.
Confirmed. Although he has a better beard than I do. I do have beard.
Are you still growing that thing?
No, I just shaved it down a little bit because it got too itchy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's down to just the goatee chin style.
Yeah. But that's fun. Now, Ben Jones will be in the next half hour. Scott Radisic tomorrow. Greg Pickle coming up later in the week as well. We got a lot going on the show. And the next hour, the top sports stories of the year that Kevin and I predict that are the big stories in our opinion. You did put yours down, correct? I sent you an email.
I didn't see an email from you.
Oh, brother.
See, this is what happens when you have me on the block sender list. I don't get them right away. I didn't get an email from you, no.
Let's see.
Your server does not like me.
Sent at 11:09 this morning.
Yeah, I usually get those at 2 a.m. the next day.
Well, you're going to have to come up with something between now and 4:06. I'm buying you time.
I'll do what I do my best. Make it up.
Maybe we should postpone this.
Make it up as I go. That's what I do best.
Maybe we should postpone this. Oh, my goodness. We're going to go through the top stories. You can think of 5 stories that you think are really important stories this year that really interest you. Okay? is if you end up with three, end up with three. If you can get them up with five, that'd be great.
Yeah, I got nothing on the email. Are you sure you sent it to me?
Yeah, I sent it to you.
Oh, I'll find it at 2 a.m. this morning or tomorrow morning.
It's very simple. It's just what I just told you. So, I was asked this morning, I was asked a lot of really good questions this morning. I was asked about how technology has changed my job. And it's, I was kidding around saying, well, for a dinosaur, it's amazing how much I use it and how I've forced myself to make sure I adapted to being able to use it. I use apps. I don't just eat them, I use them. And I was explaining everything that you have at your disposal now, but in reality, you only use 1 to 2% of it during the broadcast. Because when it comes down to it, you have to do the game, you have to call the plays, and you have to have a feel for the game. So on a chart, you may use just 1 to 2% of everything you put down in all your research, whether watching a practice, watching a tape, analytic, stats, something. But the difference is you don't know from game to game which 1 to 2% it's going to be. I gave an example this morning. The example is, I said, here's just a simple stat, very simple stat. Indiana was 1-3 in games decided by 5 points or less. That's why I said in the pregame show, if Penn State could keep it close, Indiana has not reacted well in close games this year down the stretch. And it turned out Penn State won by 5, 68-63, so now they're 1-4. Penn State's now 3-1 in those games. I said, now, I had the exact same stat down on my Iowa chart. I said, but rendered irrelevant. I said, so it never made the light of day, but it was there. It was there, I promise you. But there was no need to use it. I said, but it helps you set up matchups and so forth. For example, let's take an analytic. So many times when I was doing the pregame show this year, I would talk about Carl Nassib having a favorable matchup because I'd look at the analytics of the last four games of the offensive linemen. And a lot of times Carl was matched up against the guy that was giving up the most hurries, the most pressures. And that's why I would pick it out as the matchup of the day. It was a favorable matchup. You're looking at, again, just statistically, a guy that is struggling at that spot. Now, did I go to film and watch film to see if the film backed up the stat? If the film doesn't back up the stat because they're overloading and they're just flying guys bad, I mean, he's getting credit or the lack thereof of stopping the play, then I'm not going to consider it to be relevant. But if you see the guy on tape being beaten one-on-one and it backs up the analytic, you put it down as something to watch for in the game. And that, those are the things you look at. You know, last four games, quarterback under pressure, what does he do? Oh, wow, look at him. He's 14-20 under pressure. Okay, blitzing him doesn't really work. Oh, look, he's 5-25 when under pressure the last four games. Oh, okay, blitzing does work. And by the way, it does give the number as to what, when they blitz. So you have all this stuff at your disposal. Now you have to really weed out and find out what's relevant to the moment. So you watch tape off of apps, you get analytics off the internet. I mean, you go on and on all the things. How much technology has changed this job? And if you were to tell me 10 to 15 years ago that I would adapt, I'd have told you there's no way on the face of the earth. I would have been, I'm not going to adapt. I can't adapt to this. But somehow, some way, something happened inside that said, I think you better do this or they're going to farm you out. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Forget the groundhog. The sales manager at Sunbury Motors Kia saw his shadow on the lot.
So that can only mean one thing.
Another 4 weeks of easy dealing at Sunbury Motors Kia.
Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia.
Where we say easy, we mean easy. 0% APR financing for up to 66 months on all remaining 2015 models, as well as the 2016 Sorento, Sportage, Sedona, Forte, and the iconic Soul. SMC has snow-busting 2016 Sorentos and Sportages starting at $21,554, plus clearance pricing on all new Kias. And remember, all new Kias come with an easy 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. The sales manager at Sunbury Motors Kia saw his shadow. So there's four more weeks of huge savings at Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com. SMC, selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, I should not have done that fun thing to start with the brackets.
Why not?
Because during the entire news break, Kevin felt that since I was having fun, he had to read to me something he thought was fun.
Oh, this
about
it's funny.
The future of football. And honest to goodness, I was ready to give up all the information as to where I thought every rocket in Arsenal was in the country if it meant he'd stop.
Oh, this is funny stuff. Like, they pick the next Super Bowl matchups over the next 25 Super Bowls. And they predict where the games are going to be. And there's some interesting stadium names. DraftKings Stadium in Englewood. FanDuel Field in Miami Gardens, Florida.
Time now for this day in sports history. What?
Nothing.
You mad?
No.
Are you mad now?
No. By the way, Eagles fans, the Eagles do win a Super Bowl. Super Bowl 75 over the Cleveland Browns at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. 2041.
Who wrote this?
This is on ESPN.
Fabulous. 1920, Major League Baseball representatives outlawed pitches that involved tampering with the ball. Now, see, now that takes away all the fun.
Nah, that does.
1961, the American Football League's Los Angeles Chargers moved to San Diego.
And now, they're gone.
Well, no, they're not gone. They're not gone yet.
Sorry, they will be gone.
Not necessarily. They have essentially bought themselves until January 17th of next year to work out something with the city of San Diego to see if it's possible to build the stadium and if San Diego is willing to be a part of it and build it.
There's a word for that sort of thing. You know what it's called?
And if it doesn't work, then they have the ability to go to Los Angeles. But here's the issue they have. They're already going to be 1 year behind in marketing. And the Chargers don't have a foothold in Los Angeles, as Tony Knopp explained last week on the show. That's a big problem when you are the renter and you are the number two product in the building and number two in perception. That doesn't help you. That's why it's going to be interesting to see. I think we'll get a real feel out of San Diego by, I think, June or so as to whether or not it is possible to work something out. You were going to say what?
No, I was just going to say there's a name for what San Diego's the Chargers are doing to San Diego. It's called ransom.
No, not necessarily. No, I disagree with you on that.
Build us a stadium or we'll move.
Yeah, but Kevin, have you ever been to Qualcomm Stadium?
No, I have. I'm not saying they don't need one. I'm not saying
they do
that.
Need one.
I'm not debating that. I just don't like the way they're going about it.
But San Diego won't build them a stadium.
I understand.
They need a place to play. I mean,
my point is, move then.
But if they can work something out and stay there, I think that's preferable for all parties as long as it is financially viable for all parties. And I think that they thought they had the Carson deal all set with the Raiders. And you could tell the Spanos family was absolutely stunned that the Inglewood Stadium came out, and it was ended up being 30-2 was the final vote. I think initially it started out 20-12, and then all of a sudden it popped to 30-2. Because remember what Kroenke wants to do. He not only wants to build the stadium, but he also wants to really essentially house a campus out at Hollywood Park, which would include NFL.com. NFL Network would have its television facilities there. And it was a knock-you-over-with-a-boulder moment where they said, wow, he's going to do all of this, and he's going to use like his own money to do it? As opposed to Carson. Well, now the Chargers are scrambling. So what have they done? The Chargers have already trademarked Los Angeles Chargers, L.A. Chargers, and the various logos they have. That's one. But they've also entered back into, hey, look, instead of, they could have said, we're moving to Los Angeles now. They could have. But instead, they reached an agreement in principle that would open the door for them to move there in a year. They are definitely going to play in San Diego this year. They could have played in Los Angeles this year. But they elected not to. They elected to stay in San Diego one more year. And they would like to work something out with the people of San Diego. Now, by trademarking and by putting a deadline in place, you have to remember that the politics in San Diego, you can blame the Chargers for certain elements of this, so they're not completely off the hook here for blame. But we had a guest on from the San Diego Times-Union back in September. And we talked about San Diego State, but then we got into the stadium issue with them. And the stadium is out in Mission Valley. It has a great parking situation, but the stadium has been slowly falling apart. Now, you have the Padres are downtown. So the Spanos family would like to be downtown and have a convention center to go with it, and they say it's going to be a $1.1 million facility. Okay. They're not putting it up for ransom because you've been trying to do this since 1998. And when you keep getting stonewalled repeatedly, now maybe your demands are off the charts. That's always a distinct possibility. But when you've been continually stonewalled by the politicians and the mayor has been not exactly the friendliest guy to the San Diego Chargers brass, now at least you put something out there and said, hey, look, what's your best offer because we can do this? And then we can see what our best is and see if we can work it out. So it's not really ransom. It's just as a businessman, I'd do the same thing if I were him.
I'm just saying, work out a deal before you pick up and before you say you're going to pick up and move. I mean, if you can't work out a deal, then pick up and move.
Kevin, he's tried to work out a deal.
Okay, that's fine. Then pick up and move.
Okay. Okay. Did you hear what I just said? How long have they been trying to do this?
I understand that. And if you can't reach a deal, then
1998 was 18 years ago. Over 18 years, that stadium now is 49 years old. It's 49 years old now.
No, I don't debate the need for a stadium or anything. I'm just saying if you find that, you know, you can't reach an agreement, then go ahead and move. I just, it leaves a bad taste for me if you're going to say, well, if we don't get a new stadium, we're going to move. Okay, I understand you want a new stadium. That's fine. Just if that's the case and you worked out a deal or you can't work out a deal, then move.
Kevin, you've already been trying to work out a deal.
Right. I understand.
Without the threat of moving. So now you'd like to give it one more shot at it. Because, again, being the number two team in Los Angeles, I'm not so sure. You're losing a year in marketing. You're losing momentum. You're not the prime tenant in the building. There's a lot of things that, you know, you're in Los Angeles, so the door's open to get a lot more revenue. There's no question about that. But you're also fighting from behind in the market, too. So it's not a perfect situation going there either. And you do have, since 1961, an embedded fan base that's already there. All right, let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Again, Kevin, how long have they tried to work out a deal with San Diego?
Seems like a long time.
Yes. All right. So they're not just looking at them and going, that's it, build us a stadium, we're leaving. Well, that came out of the blue. This has been a continuing problem since 98 and especially since 2003. And it's 13 years of trying to work something out. After 13 years, you're kind of looking around saying, you know what? I can't do this another 13 years. I'm not saying the Spanoses are perfect. Far from it. But at the same time, right, let's bring in Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. I know you just don't want teams moving. I got that.
I just don't like teams moving.
Yeah, but you got to have a place to play. And I've been to that place. I was at that place when it was 22 years old. It needed help then. Ben, we watched Penn State, Indiana play Saturday. It looked to me like Indiana just played its game. Penn State was better.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I think that Penn State, you know, over the years under Pat Chambers have gotten these wins against ranked teams or just wins in the Big Ten where maybe the opponent plays down or doesn't play as well or has one of those games where you just sort of get them off on an off night and Penn State plays well. But I thought for the most part, Penn State really was the better team on Saturday night. I think they made timely shots. They started off hot, which has really been a problem for this team all year. Just, you know, they have the ability to go on those runs to get back into games. But the problem is, you know, when you're down 15 early, you're down 10 early, you go on an 8-0 run and it only takes a basket or two to sort of erase all of that effort. So I think the fact that Penn State was able to start hot, there was that stretch in the middle third of the game where, you know, both teams didn't shoot the ball particularly well. But when the offenses, you know, got back in action, Penn State was there to answer the call. And, you know, a lot of these games, it's not surprising that Penn State's in Big Ten games. We've seen that over the years where, you know, it's come down to the wire. But I think the fact that you've got Brandon Taylor making big shots, you've got him with a big assist, you know, Shep's hitting free throws down the stretch. You know, this game was Penn State to win for a long time. But at the end of the day, you get down to those final 5 minutes. It's a close game, and that's when those shots matter the most. You can make shots all game, but if you start going cold when the game comes down to the wire, it doesn't really matter what you did for 35 minutes. And I think Penn State did a good job, matching and answering the bell, countering the punches. I think boxing has been the analogy that Pat's used all year, and I think you saw that on Saturday night. Every time Indiana had a good big basket that seemed to be the moment where that game was going to slip away, somebody came back and made a shot for Penn State. So I think without a doubt, it's almost a better win that way than it is getting somebody on a down night because you know that you went toe-to-toe really with one of the best teams in the conference and played good basketball on their level.
Absolutely. And the next part, Ben, is that there to your point, Dick Girardi and I commented during the broadcast that there was a point in the game where Penn State went 244 not scoring, a drought, and the game was still 45-45. That's when you know you're right in the thick of the game. I mean, to me at that point, because, you know, you go 244 and usually that spells disaster for Penn State. This didn't. The game was still tied.
Yeah. And I mean, to a certain extent, Penn State's a little lucky there because there were some opportunities that Indiana had that they didn't make those baskets that maybe on another night they do make. But,
yep.
You know, without a doubt, when you go through a stretch like that and you can come out the other side still being in the game, that says a lot about, you know, for one, I think one of the biggest things that they've had to work on over the past few years is just sort of not letting offense dictating the effort on defense. I think that's one of those things that you hear the coaching staff preach, you know, night in and night out. So the ability for them to go and have this sort of offensive lull and keep Indiana from, you know, getting ahead of them by any reasonable margin. They didn't have a larger lead than 4 points in the second half. So to be able to do that, you know, speaks not only to your ability to survive scoring drought, but your ability to sort of come out the other side and still be in the game when you finally start making shots again.
Brandon Taylor, what have you thought about his development and what they've been able to add to the game, what they've added to his game, which he's been able to then execute?
Oh, I think he's a night and day sort of player from the larger guy that he was when he got on campus. He wasn't, you know, he's in shape, but he wasn't in the kind of Big Ten shape that they needed. You finally get him a few years later, his body is where it needs to be, but I think without a doubt, his ability to go from a guy that, you know, for the past few years we've thought of him as sort of primarily a three-point shooter that, you know, had his back to the basket at times, and you've always watched him go, you know, with his back to the basket and play really well, and you go, you know, why doesn't he do that more often? And this year he's really gone the other way around. He's a back of the basket player that shoots three sometimes now. And I can't think of, and we talk about this a lot up on Press Row, you know, a guy that has been able to turn his game not so much around, but just so radically different and be so successful doing it. I think, you know, Jeff Brooks was always a good example of a guy that had all the pieces of the puzzle, but it took until his senior year and part of his junior year to really figure out how to use everything. But even at the end of the day, you know, Jeff was a guy that was, you know, he was just better at doing what we always knew that he was capable of doing. And Brandon, you know, he's a guy that's come in, you know, trying to be one kind of player, trying to shoot the three as a big man, and then he's turned into the kind of guy that can really hurt you from both inside and outside. So, you know, you really can't say enough good things about how he's been able to change his game and really the development of the program done with him.
Devin Foster stepped in. He's played point. Do you think that's helped Shep Gardner to be off the ball at times?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that Shep, kind of like DJ, he does a little bit better when he's on the wing, when he doesn't have to have the ball in his hands. And I think you saw, you know, DJ Newbill over the year had to kind of carry that point guard load. And he certainly made it work, but it, you know, there was some trial and error there. And I think a lot of people forget that Shep, you know, is still a sophomore. We talked to him the other day and said, you know, it seems like he's been here for forever, but this is really just your second season, you know, playing Big Ten basketball. And I think, you know, Devin Foster, I think one of the most impressive things that anyone has ever said about Devin Foster is DJ actually said that he's one of the best pick and roll passers that he's ever played with. And you figure that, you know, the DJ played with Tim Frazier. He's as good as anybody about getting the ball to the guys who need it. And I think Devin's shown an ability to show that he can really finish around the rim, which is important when you've got a guy that has to be able to drive on occasion. And he's been good with the ball. So I think without a doubt, you know, it helps Penn State as a whole. And I think when Shep doesn't have to feel like everything's on his shoulders, he plays a better game as well.
They now make the turn where they've got Nebraska coming up and then Iowa, which right now would be on the one line in the NCAA tournament. Now, whether they be 1, 2, 3, or 4 as a one seed, but they'd be on the one line. And then they hit the road again to play Rutgers and so forth. How do you look at the stretch run after this game?
I think it's favorable. I think, you know, this team is playing better basketball now than it was at the beginning of the year. And you can look at some of these games, you know, the Iowa game. You kind of just throw that out the window because Iowa has been running people all season. Ohio State, that's a tough situation to play there on the road. Wisconsin, you know, they play them tough, and they play that Michigan game. At Madison Square Garden was better than maybe it looked like it was going to be for part of that. So I think you go to Nebraska, you look at Nebraska, Rutgers, and Nebraska again, Northwestern, Illinois. Those are all beatable teams. You know, you have to deal with Iowa and Michigan State in there, but even Michigan State has been shaky at times, we've seen. So I think it's a favorable stretch. Obviously, it's never easy to win on the road in the Big Ten. It's never easy to win in the Big Ten at all. But without a doubt, you look at this schedule and you go, you know, these teams are certainly beatable. There's a couple tough ones in there, but that's just how it goes when you play in the Big Ten.
Ben, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. By the way, Ben's story today on StateCollege.com. New turf going in at Holuba Hall. They'll start installing it. They'll rip out the old turf April 25th, start installing the new turf in late May, early June, and have it ready for the season. Turf's about 13 years old in Holuba Hall. Normal shelf life of field turf, about 8 to 12 years. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, some of the top stories I think we think that you should keep an eye on for the upcoming year. In the next hour, thanks to Ben Jones for joining us, as always. So you think that San Diego's holding them hostage? The Chargers are holding the city of San Diego hostage?
No, I said ransom. I think it's a ransom. You know, build us a new either get this deal done, build a new stadium, or we're going to leave. If you've already tried that, if you've already been talking to them for X amount of years, why do you think something is going to change now that you threaten to leave? Just leave then. If you feel you've done everything you possibly could in good faith to bargain this out and the city or whatever has not, then I understand that you want to leave.
Well, this is the last part where they basically will say they can look at the fan base and say, look, we tried everything we could.
And that may have a lot to do behind it. That's a great point. It may be a way to just say, hey, we've done what we've done our part. We even said we're talking about leaving.
Here's what financially what you can come up with. Now, they claim the stadium would be $1.1 billion. Now, there are some people that say that number's a bit light. Okay. But here's what they claim. The city claims that between ballot initiatives in June, that the county and the city can come up with $350 million. The NFL is going to give the Chargers $100 million to stay, plus there's $200 million in a G4 loan. So that brings the total to $650 million. Now, that's $450 million shy of the $1.1 billion total. But it should be pointed out that if the Chargers were to move to Los Angeles, they'd have to pay a relocation fee of $550 million.